All right, everybody, welcome to the Good Time Show. I'm your host, Dan Epps. Today on the show, we have an incredible chef. He is Matt Cooper. He is the owner and founder of Conifer right here in Bentonville. Probably one of the best restaurants, if not the best restaurant in Bentonville. And just so happens this week, got a James Beard Award
nominated for James Beard. Yep.
So who would have thought that in Bentonville, Arkansas, we got James Beard? Of course, that's the way it's. That's what it's like to be Matt Cooper.
Been shaping up like that lately. We had some really good, like, we had two other chefs, Rafael Rios, a good friend of mine, and then Jordan Wright, Rice Barbecue as well. So yeah, Bentonville's been on the map on their scope for a while now, and it's nice. It's good recognition. We work really hard. Me and my team work really hard. We've been together for a very, very long time and multiple restaurants, and I have about 100 years of people working for me, and we all share a vision. So it's really nice.
So what is Conifer? Just to kind of fill in, what is Conifer?
Conifer was founded on a few principles. The biggest one was it was time for me to branch off and be my own, have me be the only owner of a restaurant. You know, I cooked for everyone else for 25 years, and it was just time for me to have my own restaurant. And there was a collective group of people that had worked with me for however long that also shared the same vision. And we kind of all just came together and said, it's time. So I stepped out, gathered some funds over about a few years to keep myself the only owner, cooked privately, and then opened in August of 2022. But Conifer represented the theme behind it, or kind of the meaning behind Conifer, is planting the seeds of community. I grew up in a family of humanitarians. My father, we're all like Methodists. My father and his side of the family were all like Methodist ministers and humanitarians. My mother's side of the family were all food technologists, M&M Mars, Uncle Ben's, Riceland Foods. My grandfather started the food technology program at U of A and then Texas A&M. And so food science and building communities has kind of been the building blocks of my entire life.
So you guys are gluten-free, but you take a scientific angle when it comes to making food, or?
We do a little bit. I did a lot of, I trained out in Portland, Oregon as well. My mother was also from, I was there for about 7 years. So grew up in Arkansas, all over Arkansas, because my father was a minister and we moved around a lot. And then I was pre-med in college. It was pre-pharmacy and it was zoology. And I'd cooked the entire time. We had my daughter when I was probably about 22. And my wife was like, she's like, let's just cook. And so we moved out to Portland. I went to school there. I'd already been cooking for however many years through college and most of my childhood, and got my degree out there and cooked all over the city, and then moved back in 2010. Sometimes have you ever like not had the timeline of your life like match up? You're like, how have I lived and done those
different?
Those too many things, or done this and that, and it just doesn't make sense.
In fact, I just saw a picture pop up yesterday, and it was like 2014. I swear it was 20 years ago. I mean, it feels it goes either way. Like, either feels like it was yesterday, or it feels like, oh my God, that was only 10 years ago. So,
in 2014, I just moved here. So I moved here to help start a hospitality group, Rope Swing Group.
Okay.
And then we built a few restaurants, and then I did that for close to 8 years. And yeah, it was like, it was so amazing. And I think it really spoke, especially during that time, it spoke to like the creativity and the effort going into what was happening, because it was this, you know, I'd been cooking in Little Rock, and I just opened a restaurant for someone else and downtown the River Market. And I kept hearing these words, I needed to come up here and talk to some people. And then when I finally did, it was like, I'd really love to come up here, but like, I'm celiac. Like, I can't be around it anymore. I can't do this. And you know, they were just the most supportive people. And we're like, yeah, sure. That's great. So for us to be able to open a restaurant like that, of that caliber, like it'd be 100% gluten free in Arkansas, you know, like that was crazy for the time. So when people ask, like, you know,
that was great. I've been living in LA for a long time, so that was
like, I can go to New York and LA, and I'm still not safe unless I go to like a bunch of little small ethnic places, right? Which is primarily where I eat anyway. But you know, I can't even eat and I'm the 0.01% that can't even drink distilled spirit.
Yeah, I have another best friend that's like the true, he's the real deal.
That's the reason I don't even drink anymore. There's no point. We can't drink whiskey, so
one point. Now, to drop this, so you told me you were a preacher's son.
Yeah.
And you were the head chef and started Preacher Son. Right. I heard it was named after you at one point, or that concept.
I think there was a lot of reasons behind that. You know, old church, my father preached his first sermon right across the street.
Right.
It made sense.
Yeah, it's a very cool place.
It rooted it to the community. It rooted it to the chef at the time. You know, it was really great, you know, and they're still doing a good job now. So,
yeah. And so, they're not gluten-free anymore, though.
No, they're not.
So, being a scientific guy when it comes to food, did that come in handy when you decided to start making it like a gluten-free menu?
Yeah, I think people ask me that all the time, like, how do you do that? Well, now it's easy because it's not even in our brains that we can use it. So it never comes in the building. Like, all of our alcohol is gluten-free now. All of our beer is gluten-free now. We've been able to switch everything over. You know, we still have distilled spirits because some celiacs and other stuff, like other people like that, can still drink like that. And I'm not going to take that away from them. But
thank you. I appreciate you.
But yeah, it's like, it's not hard anymore. Yes. So I was classically trained. I trained under, you know, chefs on the West Coast, and I trained under chefs that worked directly under master chefs. And, you know, so like,
can you name drop a couple? No, not even
talk about them.
Oh, thank you.
No, that's another fun people I ask is like, oh, who are these amazing chefs and these mentors that you do? I was like, no,
yeah,
no, I learned a lot in my career, on how not to treat people and how not to talk to people and how not to do things.
Yeah, it's funny. You know what's really funny is that it's a new generation.
Yeah, I'm not giving energy to the demonstrative nature of how I was trained. And I think we need to stop doing that.
Yeah, it's funny because even television was the same way. I mean, yeah. I feel like it's like a,
when you stop,
it was like a rite of passage, right? Like I remember, I remember, you know, I got raised in a pretty crazy reality TV time, and reality TV came from a lot of people that came from like talk shows, and talk show environment was the most toxic thing ever. They would scream at people. They can't tell if they didn't answer the call from their executive, they were fired. I mean, it was just brutal. And so the early days, I mean, of reality, and I found myself, even when because I was a young executive producer, that I took a lot of that negative energy. And then I finally, one day I woke up and I was like, what am I doing? Yeah. I was like, I'm a nice guy. I'm a really funny person. And I like to treat people well.
Yeah.
And then I had to literally regear myself because that's how I was trained. I was yelled at and screamed at. And you think it's worth it because you see this dream that you want.
Yeah, or you're just used to, like, I think a lot of cooks growing up, like my generation, and there's still, you know, and I saw this the other day, and I had to kind of reframe what I was thinking, because I see this, like, you know, you always do this, leave kids today. And then this one European chef, and I was, it's like, he's got like 2 stars or something like that. He was like, no, listen, like, there were people that were like that then when we were training. They're just, and there's still people good that have the determination and that they did then. And we do. I have like 3 of them. I love them. They're amazing. But yeah, to bring you back, and I'm ADHD like crazy. So to bring you back to the point of, like, you know, Conifer, like, that's all that trauma, all that, you know, like, I worked for, you know, one job I started when we moved back here. Like, I worked 16 hours a day for 7 days a week for 8 months straight. Like, you know, just like, that just happened. And I was trapped back here in Arkansas. It's like, you know, and it's, you know, maybe it wasn't that bad, but it was close. You know, and didn't, if I did have a day off, it didn't feel like one because I was so exhausted. There was nothing, you know, I blinked and my daughter was in the 10th grade, you know, and that's when, like, this stuff started happening. It's like, no, like, I just started remembering how I was brought up and everything else. And
you mean brought up, you mean like your childhood?
Yeah. Like, brought up in my childhood and just like how important family was to me and things like that. And I'm not saying I wasn't there. I was there, but, you know, it was just time for me to open the restaurant. And so conifer means planting the seeds of community. A conifer is a seed. It's also a tree. It provides oxygen. Like, we provide oxygen to our people. So conifer was founded to provide a safe, healthy, nurturing environment to all of the people. Like, we do full coverage healthcare here. We did it after 6 months. We pay 50% of that. It's an amazing plan. And that's not bragging. That's like, it's one of the reasons why we opened the restaurant, because you just don't get that. Like, we have people make a livable wage for, you know, the best part. We try to pay people really well. And then all the money that we make, you know, it comes back, it goes right back into this place so that we can do it. So hopefully we'll be able to do 401k soon. And for us to be able to do that and have, you know, one owner and, you know, like, we're just all one big family, you know, which has its challenges because we're a big family. And, you know, there's not this, like, someone has a bad day, week, month, or year. Like, we're trying to figure out how we can get them through that instead of saying, you're not doing what we need you to do. You're not being productive. You're going to have to go. Right. It's just a different, it's a completely different, it's not a completely different environment, but it's an environment in which I didn't get the opportunity to really be in this industry. And I think there's a lot of people making measurable change. And I think there's a lot of people saying that they are. And I think that, you know, that's the work that we chose to do. And we're still trying. So we support all local farmers in the way in which they need to be supported, you know, and then we do the best we can after that. You know, we're not perfect. We make mistakes like everybody else. But we just keep trying the best that we can. But yeah, I always tell people, it's like, I don't care if it's fail. It's how you recover from that failure that I care about, right? Showing that you care about it and things like that. You don't have to come in here and want to be a cook or a chef. Like, you just want to come in here and be passionate about like doing a good job or evolving in some way. Like we do some fun things where if someone wants to go in and evolve in some way, go and take a wine class, go take, you know, as long as it's, you know, any type of measurable education, then we'll take care of that. I'll do like a week of that, and I'll pay them to go in like better themselves because they bring that knowledge back. And then they're just always constantly evolving. Like when we write menus, like most of the cooks are sitting down at the table and we're talking about like, you know, what it is. And it just kind of goes around the table and it's kind of like that funnel effect. Like if I told you something, by the time it came all the way around, it'd be something completely different and you wouldn't understand it. It's a really beautiful thing because by the time it comes around, then you've got a dish that like everybody's had a piece of and you've all had a chance to really strategize about it. And that just happens all the time. That never always happened. Like when we're sitting down, it happens like when we're standing up in service because we have things coming in all the time, you know, that are always changing. And we're always trying to think about, you know, that's at the forefront of everything. It's like, okay, what's in season? What are people growing? What do people need us to move? You know, like what do local farmers need us to move? Like they planted something and somebody committed to it. And then they said, no, they can't use it. We're using it.
Oh, so that's super interesting. Cause you are...
It's a different pro forma than and other restaurants do that. I just don't think a lot of the restaurants around this area do, right? It's a struggle, but that's what we've chosen to do. That's why we always have a ground lamb product on the menu.
Ground lamb.
Yeah, from Hannah Farms. We help them get a start because most people don't want ground lamb. Most people want like the racks or the shoulder or the leg or the shank. And same thing with our pork farmer, Bansley. Like, you know, we've used them for years and years and years, and they tell us what they need us to use, and that's what we use. And then when they're out of it, we go, what next? And they go, I need you to use this, and that's what we use. And so it's just kind of a different, you know, we have this little thing where we say, like, if our farmers aren't relying on us to pay their bills, like, it's not all like that, but it's a part of our conversation. It's definitely a part of how we think about anything. You know, there's things that I use here that I normally wouldn't use in a restaurant because that part of it is like, how can we help people?
What would be that thing?
So, I mean, some things like, you know, like radishes. Like there's a lot of radishes. Like everybody grows radishes and nobody uses that much radish.
Right.
You know what I mean? Even though they're amazing radishes, you know, we have fine creative means. So we ferment some, we pickle some, we shave some and put them on the thing. You know, we saute them into a shadow to face style, like with butter and sugar. And, you know, we're normally you don't like we're using, you know, and then we still use the creative things too. We use specific fish out of the Pacific Northwest, out of the water to us the next day. We're very specific about the fish that we use and the traceability and how we can get it. Like myself coming from the Pacific Northwest and having those connections with the vendors there that I've had for 20 something years now, you know, like I still have those same connections. Like the people that was, you know, Kelsey, one of my favorite vendor. She was my foods and season rep like 20 years ago. And then she was my Jacobs and Salt rep. And then she was my Fresh and Wild rep. And then she's now back at Foods and Season. So I think that, you know, what we talk to all of our people about all the time, and it's a constant conversation, is relationships matter. Like I'm not calling people trying to get the best price. Like price matters, obviously. Like we have to turn a profit so that we can put money back into the restaurant, right? But we're not trying to overinflate our prices. We're trying to charge what we need to do to pay our bills, to meet the requirements that we've done, to provide healthcare, to do all these things for our people. And we're just really lucky enough to be in like this microcosm environment of Bentonville where people are so receptive and supportive of that. It's like, I don't think that I could do it anywhere else. And I don't think I'd want to. It's a really unique environment. That what we've been able to do for our people, and that's what we're really proud about, you know, like that we're able to do that. And you know, I love it when people come in, and obviously I love it when they come and like the food, right? But I love it when they're like, everybody looks really happy here. Like, we've had people come in.
So and somebody just said that yesterday, or when I was talking to them. What was I saying? And they were talking, they came in here, and they just said, everybody, because where were we? Well, we were somewhere, and everybody just seemed like they're in a pissed off mood. And we were just like, and it's just such a different feeling when you're, when you walk into a place and you can feel like it's home and you can feel like the people actually care. And,
No, and that's this is true. Like, people ask me, like, how do you gauge success? Right. And I say, by the happiness of my people. Like, and that's the most true and honest thing that I could say. Like, obviously the financials have to be right. You know, the bills have to be paid, and it's a struggle sometimes. You know, it's a very fluctuating market, and you have to be good at finances. But, you know, I think beyond anything and everything else, if your people are happy and you care about them and you know what they want out of their lives, I feel like you have a responsibility as a chef. I hold chefs in high regard. Like, I think there's plenty of people in the world that are called chef that should never be called chef. I don't even really care if anyone calls me chef. I barely let some of my people call me chef, but I think that's because I hold them in such high regard on what we could be and how we can kind of tie. Let me think about the power that chefs have nowadays. You have the power to like help agriculture. You have the power to bring communities together. You have the power, like, and then you just go crazy off, and you have the power to like manipulate everything. Like, some people are like, it's crazy what chefs have the capabilities to do in local communities, right? And I think that comes with a sense of responsibility too. So I think it's really important to make sure that, like, you know, we know the people that work for us and their families and their path and what their kids are up to and things like that. Like, you can gauge measurable change on that. You can understand what they need and how to motivate them. You can understand when they're not doing good and how to support them. You know, that's, you know, I was raised by an amazing woman and, you know, and father. And that was just something that we were always taught. It's like, look, if you just care about people, even the people that have left that have come in, and there's been some that have come in and it just wasn't the right fit.
Right.
Right. I still love them all. I care about every one of them. And hopefully we were able to put them on a path to be able to help them. You know, or just put them on a path for something that's better. We have conversations all the time. Like, if this is not right for you, that's great. Like, let us know how to put you on that path. That's part of what we'd like to do. You know, we don't want to leave anything undone or unsaid. And, you know, there's exceptions to the rule everywhere.
Is there a proudest moment that you've had?
I think I'm proud every day when I walk in here, honestly. I love these people, man. They're like, they're not only my family, but like, you know, you work in, especially in the culinary industry, you work, you know, 16 hours a day with people. Like, you know, that's 5 days a week. And then, you know, six, sometimes, like, we don't do that. Like, we really have a work-life balance. Like, my people work, you know, salary people work 50 hours a week. You know, I have a few extra salary people because I feel like, again, we need to be able to like have that balance with life so we can have the time and energy to be creative and support each other. I think the things that make me proud is when I see all of us like talking and communicating and being open and like laughing and just living our lives and like struggling together, you know. Probably a little bit of that's my wife talking. She's a therapist. Yeah, she's given me a lot of good cues on people. But
good idea for me to get one of those, not just a girl.
I think everyone needs one. Absolutely, 100%.
What's your favorite thing to cook in this here? Like, you do a lot of stuff with open flame, right? Or is that?
Yeah, so I'm leaving tomorrow to do, I do an event once a year. It's called Winterlager, and it's Rick Spicer out of Pack Rat in Fayetteville. He's a big survivalist and archer. God, I don't want to get it wrong, but he makes his own bows, quivers. Like, it's like, well, he's just an amazing human. And I go out there with him and about 18 to 30 people once a year. We hike out into the Ozark National Forest and,
Is it more, it's like a history lesson as well?
Like survivalists, like you go out there and you have, you know, you have a tent, but you bring your own water, bottles for filtration. And they teach a class. He normally has a few friends coming from all over, and they teach a class from primitive shelter building to starting fires to, if you're out hiking, like what to have. So that if you get caught in dark, because all of us have done that, and got caught at dark, you need to survive. Like if someone breaks a leg, like it's a very It's a very entailed, very serious, serious class. Like last year we went out there and we got an email before we went out, and it's always in January. It's always cold as all get out. And we went out and it was like, listen guys, we're altering the class a little bit because, you know, there was going to be possible snow. And it turned out like 15 inches of snow rained down on us. And then we had like, it was like negative 15. So at night we were putting, you know, and we could have all gone back, but that was the point of survival. And we're very safe. No one was unsafe, but we all heated up boiled water, put them in Nalgene bottles, threw them into our sleeping bags to keep us warm throughout the night and stuff like that. And it was a great experience and it was good. There's no cell phones out there, so you get to unplug. And what I love about it is, so my portion of this event is I do all the cooking for the event. So it's just me or myself and normally a sous chef. I take a different person from my staff every year to give them an experience. And we just cook on an open fire, like not even a big one. Because we have to hike like a few hundred yards in the Ozark National Forest. We go across the river and then we hike into the forest. So like you can't bring a lot. And we just cook. So we're tending, like last year it was so cold. We had to change all the way the tents were in our main like camp hub to where it was a big thing. So it was just like a smoke tent. Like I couldn't see anything. They've got pictures of just like, you can't even see me. You just see like fire-ish stuff. And then I couldn't see anything. I put like sunglasses on or whatever I could do. This year I'm actually bringing goggles so that I can see, because we just don't know what's going to happen. There's precip maybe happening on Sunday, but and we just cook on a very small open fire, and it has to be very very planned out. So that the food's like not freezing and it's the quality that we want, because I have my standards, and they get to be out there and enjoy these amazing classes. I mean, it's just really cool. It's just a good time. Yeah.
Food innovation seems like a thing that you do a lot.
Huge. Sort of. I like to say I'm like constantly trying to take food backwards in a good way. We really one of my best friends, Michael Robershaw, he said this once and I really love it. He's like, we just take a, you know, I just take a, try to take an ingredient and try not to F it up. You know, except he said the whole word, you know, and that's what we try to do. We're, you know, luckily all of us kind of have the same vision about like taking these amazing ingredients that people have grown here, or people that have, you know, caught things and taken meticulous care to package them and get them to us extremely quickly, so it's the freshest it can be. And, you know, and then other, like when we order from Anson Mills, where a lot of our grains come from, like they mill it when we order it, you know, and they're bringing back heritage grains from the Carolinas, and, you know, and even some of it's grown in Arkansas, like Carolina gold rice. You know, we got blue corn grits that we use, got wild rice that we use, you know, some really good Red Island sea peas and sea pea flour that we fold into our natural flatbreads and things like that. So we're always trying to take these ingredients and do it. Now, the new project that we're doing that I've been working on for 20 years will take what we do and kind of fine tune that and narrow it even further. So we have done a good job at supporting local farmers, I think, and we're always trying to continue to do better. But we burn through a lot of their product with the business we have here, and we're like, we're stuck trying to figure out like what's the next specific name, you know, where it is it, because we've burned them out of that. So we're building our own farm.
I was going to ask you about that. So yeah, you mentioned that before, that you're building your own farm, and it's around, it's close to here.
Yeah, it is. It's about 5 miles east of here. And so on our land and mine and my partner's land, Paul Esther, and we're building a farm. We have a historic house that was built in the 1800s. The farm is a historic marker, and we've gutted the house and we're rebuilding it. And that'll be a 26 seat restaurant. We'll have a private dining room that has about 8. And so that's it. It'll be like a 10 course tasting menu. Everything that we grow on the farm, we're going to serve there, plus doing everything that we do here. But it gives us the opportunity. That menu could change daily or weekly.
Got it. And that's got to be just kind of a...
It's just a tasting menu. It's, you come, you make a reservation, you pay before you come.
It's like a 5-course kind of meal kind of situation. 10-course. Oh, wow.
So. You pay before you come. You tell us your allergies.
Got it. So it's a one price fit. Yep. One price. You come in.
Tell me. You are wide. You come in and we feed you.
Sounds great.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's time. A few places have tried in the past, I think, but... This is pretty significant, and you know, it's part of a much bigger, with me, it's always part of a much bigger
idea, eventually we will hold like big community events out there, family events out there. Like I have one of my best memories ever is when I lived in Portland and I would take my daughter and my wife and we'd go out to Savis Island, which is this kind of island on the east side of Portland. I do believe east side. It's all organic, but it's just filled with farms. Like it's just farm after farm. And we'd go out there in the middle like of June and when the flowers were blooming and the blueberry fields would just be going crazy and the marionberries and blackberries and it'd just be people out sitting and listening to music and kids running through the, I mean, it's just like, it's that beautiful picture, you know, and I've always wanted that. And so, you know, it's part of a much bigger project to involve the community. And we have this
finer dining component associated with it that kind of drives that movement, drives that forward progression of food. Now that's when, you know, it'll be small plates, like, you know, and we're talking, you know, comparable to if you were to go to Spain or France or something like that, or Europe and eat and get a tasting venue and things like that. That's kind of the vision while still also existing in Arkansas and reinvigorating this amazing historic house and farm and stuff like that. And I live on it. So it's like, it kind of brings everything back to like, you know, bringing everybody where I am, which is great. And making sure that, you know, we're all together. The same reason I built the kitchen in Conifer to be completely open, you know, right. And open to the point of like, there's no smoke and mirrors. There's no anything. If you sit at the bar, you see if we make mistakes, you see if we get frustrated, you see if we're getting our butts handed to us because everybody sat at once, you know, like, I think it's really, that transparency is really important to show that, like, you know, there's not smokes and mirrors, man. It's just people working hard. And also it's good for us to see you guys. Like, I don't want any of my people to be hidden from the people that we're trying to serve. That's why we're here, right? Yeah. That's hospitality. So it also gives us the opportunity to never have this idea of who the people out there are eating. You know, I grew up cooking in some places where like, oh, I bet this person's, you know, yeah. You know, just they just when they, you know, and you have the opportunity to see everybody and interact and say hi. And when we started Conifer, I was on the line every night for years and they had to drag me off a few months ago. But, you know, and there was just all chefs on the line. And then we slowly would hire one person, hired my sous chef, Christine, and then I trained her. And then she just went down the line and trained at every station. And once that was done, we picked one of the chefs to go off during the daytime to run the prep and then kind of did that until everybody was just like completely honed in. And so we'll kind of do that over at the new restaurant as well. We're calling it, we've released it, but we're calling it Ryn, R-Y-N. And when growing up, my grandmother, everything has to have meaning for me. And it has to have like a place in my soul and my heart. Because I think that's important because it gives you a sense of ownership in it.
I was going to ask you, you obviously are close with probably your grandparents and your mother and
yeah.
Your grandparents maybe passed away, but what was your first moment in knowing that you enjoyed cooking? Was there a first dish that you remember cooking?
Nah, I don't have one of those like iconic memories.
You know, my first thing I ever cooked was chicken fried steak.
Yeah. Oh, my wife will say that the first thing that I ever cooked for her was spinach Alfredo. And she said that I thought that it, like, I was the fanciest thing in the world. And I was like, Jesus, but, you know, heavy cream, just garlic and just a bunch of spinach and pasta and, you know. but no, I mean, my mother, like, we never went out to eat growing up. My mother was a food technologist.
What is a food technologist?
If you go to the store and buy anything in a box, a food technologist created it or a package. Cereal, rice, everything else. So I grew up in a world where, like, I know what.
Does that mean she knows all the preservatives and all that kind of stuff?
She knows how to recreate that. So for the best instances, like, we never ate out growing up ever. We always ate home cooked meals. We always like cooked together or, you know, something like that. But if we go on vacation, like we went to Disney World or something, we were younger and we stopped at a Red Lobster, which was like, oh my God, Red Lobster, right? Back in the day. And, you know, like, I didn't like a lot of the other stuff, but like the cheese biscuits, God, they were so good. So what a food technologist does. So my mother just took like three of them, put them in a tow thing. We went to Florida thing, came and, you know, to the vacation, came back. She just kept it the entire time because we drove. And then a week later for dinner, we had Red Lobster cheese biscuits. So she took the biscuits, she titrated them, she chemistry, all the stuff, figured out exactly what was in it. So my mother's job was to take competitor stuff and figure out exactly what was in it
and then recreate it, expand upon it, and make it their own, right? And so, and then, you know, food technologists that like just are regular. My uncle worked it for M&M Mars for years and years and years, you know, and he just told me these hilarious stories about like, oh, the candy coating department. Like it's separate, right? You got the filling department, you got the candy coating department, you know, and you got like the sugar crunch. Like it's all like you don't mess with that. You got people to strategize what the filling should be and they stay in their lane. And then you got the people that are the candy coating people and nobody messes with them. Like you don't go trying to like change anything. You know, like you told me some pretty hilarious stories where they like kind of go at it. So you stay in your lane. We're the candy coating people. And you're like, it is the same thing, man. It's like, you don't melt now, like in your hand. And so it's funny. But we always had like, you know, and he helped create some of those things. I can't say which ones, but you know, it's like we went to visit him. It's like open the cabinet and it was just like candy. You know, all the new experimental stuff, all the other stuff, like before
you
came out.
That I haven't been able to find yet. I know that there's so many Walmart vendors that everybody, there's the people that are in that, they have all the demo stuff that's got out and there'll be some boxes full of it.
Yeah, I have some friends that do some demo stuff for some of the big vendors for Walmart or stuff like that. And every once in a while, they'll bring me something. I'm like, oh, that's cool. They're like, put this on your knee, it'll heal it. I'm like, no. No, I know you're all natural. This is, I'm like, I'll rub it on and be like, oh. Nah, that's going to be addictive.
Do you try to be natural as possible in all?
Because I'm celiac and I just have the way I was raised.
Is you raised on a farm or were you raised?
Actually, I wasn't. So I don't, you know, I don't have one of those like beautiful stories. Now, my grandfather on my mother's side always had a farm growing up. So when we go to visit, like, I mean, everything was fresh. He'd pick everything from his garden and stuff like that. And I grew up in rural towns in Arkansas where all my friends were farmers, like big aggregation, like agriculture farmers, like rice, soybeans, and stuff like that. And so farming has always been a part of my life because of the communities that I've lived in, which means I've lived in, you know, a lot of places that didn't have a lot of money in my ear. Right. You know, it's, and then, you know, and then lived in, we would just always lived in rural places growing up in Arkansas. And then moved to, you know, when we moved to, I graduated high school, I lived in Austin, Texas for a little while, moved back to Arkansas, and then met my wife when I was in college again, and then moved to Portland. And, you know, like, I think just the way that I was raised, you know, when we moved to Portland, it was just like I was home. It just felt, it felt right. Like, it wasn't like, oh my God, this is a big city. Like, it just felt like home. I've never not felt home anywhere. Like, if I wanted to, home is where you're people. Like, you can kind of,
I agree.
Like, you know, I'd be in the middle of Hollywood and I'd be like, yeah, all right, I probably wouldn't like some of it.
Right.
You know, because I've been there. Or if you put me in the middle of a big city, like, I tend to like more nature around me.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. But, like, you can put me anywhere and I'm going to acclimate.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Same thing. I like survival.
And I like people.
I like people.
Yeah. If I can't speak the language, if I'm there long, I will.
Yeah.
Oh, I want to.
I want to. A couple of shows now, and the Google Translate thing is amazing.
It's amazing.
I would have an hour and a half trip back and forth to the set.
I know.
And I would just have these conversations, and it would just go back and forth. And it was so enlightening to get to know these guys.
When I love how technology is changing. I just keep seeing these little earphones that are popping up on, like, Instagram, and it's, like, it's translating it. I'm like, all right, I got to get the, like, God, I got them. They're cheap. It's happening soon, you know. I've been waiting for it for years, just where you can be, like, Star Trek. You know, it'd be like,
I bet those glasses Meta has, doesn't it? I bet those.
Yeah, I think it is. It's like, it's crazy. I mean, it's like, so, yeah, that it's, but that's amazing because it's just, you know, I have friends that, like, growing up in kitchens, like, where, you know, like, one of my best friends is from Mexico City, and I can speak Spanish pretty well. But I guess that's one of the key parts of, like, who I am as a human and wanting to get to know people so that I can understand who they are. Like, can't talk to some of his family members because they're just like, so I'm slow down. And I'm like, tell my friends, you know, like, just only speak in Spanish to me. He's like, no, man, I don't want to do it. I'm here now. I'm like, no. I'm like, it's not fair. So I just want to go and, you know, hopefully we'll end up, you know, thinking about end up in, you know, in Portugal or Spain, you know, 3 months out of the year, like later on in life would be like a dream.
Kids are,
you know, would be like a dream. Yeah, I'm excited. I love to sail. And
oh, really? You're sailing? You're on the boats? You actually do
one? Yeah, I have a 34-foot, I got it on Beaver Lake right now, but I have a 34-foot solid wood mahogany boat, custom built. It's like in 1969. Yeah. It's old. It's just a solid wood tank, and you got it out and sail. It's pretty awesome. It's a big boat for a tiller, too. It's a lot. I spent the summer, like, renovating it and just you know, taking out some frustration and everything else. He's like in sanding for hours and hours. And yeah, I got all my training out on when I was building Conifer. I cooked for a beautiful, amazing family out in, sounds fancy, but in the Hamptons or Sagaponic, and lived with them for the summer. And
obviously.
Yeah. And cooked for them. And on my days off, I would just sail. I'd take my sailing certifications. Became good friends with the people in the sailing school. They're like, we've never known anybody to like come out and like 2 months just take every course. And I was like, I'm here. That's why I did it, you know. So, and I was able to come back. So yeah, I mean, eventually, like, we always grew up going to the ocean, and I've never been like I want to sit on a beach in a margarita kind of guy. I'm like, I want to be like on the ocean and no one else around.
Yeah, I kind of like it all.
So that when I'm around people, I'm like, yeah, I want to be around people and I want to do that. But then I just like complete and utter like,
yeah. Are you going to try to grow the Conifer brand and put it somewhere else? Or are you just going to, you know, just stick to this one?
No, I think Northwest Arkansas is an amazing environment. And you know, what we're trying to do here as a company, and I say we, and I always say we, because even though I'm the company, like, we are the reason why we're successful. We're the reason why we've gotten these accolades and you know, and that in the community, like the support we have is.
But you guys were really the first, well, the first nice restaurant after Preacher's Son.
Well, that's nice.
I think so, right? I mean, maybe Barclita.
Barclita, they do a really good job.
Yes.
Yeah, they do a really good job. I don't know. I'm not that human. I just think, like I said, we kind of keep to our bubble, and we just try to do a good job for us. How the best possible way for us to gauge, you know, like if we're doing a good job is if I see people again.
Right.
You know? I don't know. I don't like saying like we're the nicest or something like that.
It's just such a nicest. I think we came to the first like place where you're like, wow, this is Bentonville.
I think people think it's unique. It's definitely like Conifer is definitely a merging of, you know, the Pacific Northwest where I'm from, and then also Arkansas where I'm from. For sure, that's what it's supposed to be. Again, but it's also people are like, oh, who designed it? It's like myself and my architect. That's it. Like we did everything. I hung the lights myself. All the wood in the restaurant is local. The tables were made by Jesse Wiggins at American Estates, who's a good friend. And like, you know, it's all like spalted sycamore from where they cleared the land at Crystal Bridges. And then, you know, the trim feature over the thing is, or over the banquette is a white oak, you know, from my backyard. And like all the, you know, Scott Train did the, at, you know, who's a Timbernack, is an amazing woodworker, a great guy. Like, worked with him for years. He did all the host stand and the main bar for the expo. And, you know, like the community, that's what I love. The community came together to help build this restaurant.
That's what this place
is. No, and that's what it's about. Like my architect, when we sat down and she's like, well, what do you want? And I'm like, you know me, right? She's like, yeah. I was like, I don't want to stop your creative process.
Right.
And we just talked about everything. If she had holes that she needed to fill about things in my life and my vision, then I just told her, and then she did it. And it's the best representation of who I am.
Very cool. Like that wood thing is
amazing. And it's functional, right? Like I got so tired of building restaurants that weren't functional. They were pretty and not functional. You know, that entire kitchen, I could just move it if I wanted to. I don't know why I would, but I could just move the whole thing. Yeah, that whole thing. Like the whole bar right there, all the things. Yeah, it's all, nothing's cemented down. I could move it. I could change the way it looks. I could put a wall up. I could change, you know, I could do whatever I wanted. And that versatility to be able to change, evolve, and grow is really important to me, you know? Obviously, some of the stuff would have to say, but yeah.
What were some of the biggest challenges getting this thing open just in your whole career?
Ooh, how do we be nice and say? I think that, you know, this was the sixth or seventh restaurant that I built from the ground up. Probably the fourth of this caliber, like, or this money or caliber or whatever you want to say. And time and effort, design, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, each one always presents its own challenges. Obviously, you're never going to open. What do you think you're going to open? I think the biggest one was just there's so much going on in Bentonville that parts of the process are not as evolved as you think they would be.
What do you mean by that?
I mean, like, we can get a lot of stuff done, but like other like regulations and things like that need to get up to speed.
Yes.
You know?
And I do know that, like,
without going too deep down in the rabbit hole, you know, like, I don't need to spend like, you know, an hour and a half, 2 hours talking about where an exit sign goes when I just want it to go where legally it should go so that people can exit my building, you know? But when you have so many people building these amazing structures and there's so many designers popping in and out of town and stuff like that and on these projects, like, they care about that. So people that normally are having to fight these things, like, they don't have to fight it with me, but they'd have to fight these things. It's changed the dynamics of like, even inspections and things like that, you know? I'm like, no, that's okay. Just put it where it needs to go. They're like, what? I'm like, yeah, just put it where it needs to go. Like, are you sure you don't need, no, I don't need to talk to anyone. Just put it where it needs to go. You know, like silly things like that. And it's not on them either. It's just because the challenge is the same thing. Like we have things popping up everywhere, right? Construction popping up everywhere. And it's fantastic. And it's going to be great. And it's going to be great.
It's a growing time.
Which means thought about infrastructure while that's happening, right? It's the same thing. It's the physiology of the town. There's so much growth happening here, which is so amazing.
It's hard to not get annoyed by it, but when it's done, it's going to be.
But when it's done, there'll be something else. So it's just because it's never going to stop growing. This area, this growth is just, it's unfathomable, right? And it's just like, so, you know, it's just like chasing something you're never going to catch. Like by the time it's built, you're like, great. Oh, there's like three other things. Okay. You know, like navigating downtown is crazy. But like you said, like it doesn't matter. That's the beauty. I mean, it does, but it doesn't. Like we still have people that are willing to traverse the traffic and the construction and the where do we park and how do we get in the back door? I don't see it, you know, like it's so people are, that's great. That's what's amazing about the community, you know, and you know, I just can't say enough about it.
I can't either. I you know, being from Hollywood and my friends in Hollywood still, I just had a meeting yesterday with some pretty big like production people and they do a lot of work with brands. And I was like, oh, so you guys do a lot of work with brands, whatever. And I go, she goes, yeah, but one of our partners goes down to Bitball all the time. I was like, well, do they love it? And they were like, I mean, and I'm like, oh, because they just come in,
yeah,
they do the thing and they leave. They haven't actually like,
yeah,
they come
into Arkansas, right?
Oh, it's Arkansas. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, look, you know, it's like, it's Arkansas. With the amount of years they haven't even thought about enjoying it or coming and check it out. It's like, because it used to not be what it is today.
No, I mean, I understand, but I wish that everybody would have a little bit more of a frame of mind that, like, you know, some of the best musicians in the United, like, came out of
it. It's true. It gets a bad.
But I'm saying, like, my career, people are like, how, like, what was it like being a chef from Arkansas, training, like, the majority of my, well, now I've been here back for 10 years, but the majority of my professional career, like, growing up in Portland, like, professionally. And I was like, oh, I got called a lot of names until I was their boss real quick, you know? And so, or like, you know, just like it was, yeah, there's definitely stigmas, you know? It still happens every once in a while. It doesn't bother me more. It just rolls on my back. We're like, you know, some people come in and they're like, oh my God, they're so nice. They're like, it was amazing. Where are you from? And I was like, you're like, nah. Where'd you train? Where are you from? And I was like, I mean, I went to Portland. There it is. I was in Portland. And I'm like, I mean, I'm from here.
I'm from here. Yeah. It is really funny how, like,
I'm from here.
But you're too cool for Arkansas.
Here's
the thing. People go, you're like, oh, you're in Arkansas. And people are like, now there's some people who have negative ideas about Arkansas. I just never thought in a million years that I would live in Arkansas. Like,
I never thought my father and my mother was still alive. She would be dumbfounded that I'm still here, but I'm not supposed to use the word "but" anymore. This is my wife because it's negative connotations. And I think at some point in time, something takes. Like I always wanted to be somewhere else because I grew up here, and it's like I don't want to ever be in Arkansas again. And you know, because I grew up in the same stigmas. You know, like people I grew up with, and I had good people, and you know, not so good people. And I was like, I just, you know, I think something switched in my mind. And you know, and Bentonville really stuck with me. It really did. When I was in Little Rock, I spent 10 years in Little Rock off and on. And I love Little Rock. But then I came up here and it was just like, what's happening? Something's happening up here. And I moved back to Arkansas to be very clear, to be able to make a difference. Like I was one of 300 chefs in Portland, you know, trying to do the exact same thing. I just couldn't make a difference. And it's not about ego. It's like, I just want to be able to make a difference. you know, in people's lives. And I could have made in a small environment and stuff like that. But I've just, it's been so refreshing to be able to like measurable impact. When I see chefs that are executive chefs in this area that have worked with me when they were younger or worked with me as sous and stuff like that. And they're at the height of their career and they're doing amazing. Like that feels really nice. It feels really nice to be able to watch their journey. And then, you know, now I'm calling them for help or I'm, you know, that's great. Like, you know, and not that wouldn't, the culinary community anywhere, hospitality community anywhere, for the most part is a very collaborative, diehard community that helps each other out no matter what. I mean, we saw that in COVID, they pulled together like crazy, but we were still losing amazing restaurants. Like they're dropping like flies. And that's why I would probably never move what I do here anywhere else. I think that it gives us the opportunity to do what we really want to do. And that being said, it kind of goes back to like, you know, next steps with the farm, the restaurant, this, you know, we've got some other projects planned. And really those are not because we want to keep expanding. I really just want the two.
You want to give me insight where those are? Are they secrets?
No. I mean, we'll eventually probably have a bar. And it just, it'll be different. You know, we always want to add something to the environment, not compete with it, right? And that's kind of part of our vision too. It's like we want to add something that's missing or that we think might be missing and fill a gap instead of like trying to take business away. Because eventually, you know, there will be over cannibalization in the market, right? And we're not trying to do that. Like
right.
that's not in the vision. We're not trying to compete with really anyone. I think Bentonville has a unique opportunity for you to like go get appetizers at Oven and Tap and come here for dinner and then go get dessert somewhere else or vice versa and be able to do, you know, all these things. And I don't know. I love this little community. But yeah, we'll do a few things. But what we do is we have so many talented people that work here and then they get to a point where there's nowhere to go. Right. There's nowhere. And if there's not anywhere to go, then that's kind of organically. We're like, okay, well, we're going to do a few things. And I would like to just be able to use what we do here at Conifer to provide a place for people to go and help them get set up with their own place. And then just be like, you got it. This is yours. We helped you get there. And then just kind of back away. Right. And be there for support, but let them own it. Right. Because no one can really have ownership of anything unless they own it.
Yeah, it's all theirs. Their right. baby. Take the hardships, the bad times, the good times.
The next steps for us are in the future are really to be able to like take creative people that are wanting to open things. It's not a Conifer brand, but people that have worked with us that have amazing ideas that want to further, you know, build beautiful things in this community. We want to help them do it. You know, and that means we have to continue to push harder and be better and you know, work harder so that we can provide the financial means and other means to be able to do that or support or whatever via accolades or whatever it might be. You know, that's kind of our vision to be able to do that. Like if I can help other people, like I've got a collection of people that could probably jump off and open their own restaurant right now. A good collection of people. And we talk about it all the time. Which is different than the conversation of the places that I grew up cooking, where it's like, you know,
I'm good enough. You're probably not.
Oh yeah, it's that, or it's like, I mean, if I'm not trying to take my chef's job because that's the natural progression, like I want your job, or you know, it's like if I say like I'm, you know, I'd really like to go and do this, then I either get fired or I get treated like crap because I don't want to be there anymore. When it's not that, it's that. I have something else that I would love to do, like that passion, right? So it's like trying to change that dynamic a little bit, you know? And it might not even be hospitality. It might be like, I want to go open this or that, or I want to go make clothes and have a shop and stuff like that. Like whatever it is, like, you know, the good thing about chefs, like we were talking about, it's like, we know a lot of people. So it's like when people are like, hey, I need some help. I'm looking for this place. I want a retail place or something like that. Like if I don't know somebody, I know someone that knows somebody.
Yeah, I agree.
You know,
I feel like I know a ton of people. And right. It's just like, it's going down this new business and I never, you know, I've never used the Rolodex, but now I'm like, oh, well,
yeah. I just search in my phone, like plumber or realtor or, you know, whatever it may be. It's like, you know, a glass blower. I don't know. Glass. You know? Oh yeah. Look. Oh yeah.
That's good.
Right.
Well, I was just about to ask you, this might be the answer to it, but what do you feel like your greatest triumphs have been? I mean, obviously opening this bar and giving people jobs must feel amazing.
I think that being able to put people on a path to do what they want to do, or at least provide them an environment that I never got, where, again, you can successfully fail. You know, I mean, we have plenty of people that work here now that have come from other restaurants in the area or other restaurants where the chefs screamed at them and stuff like that. And we've had to literally like rehabilitate them, you know, where they like afraid to come up and talk, you know, during service, you know, and it's like, no, it's okay. What do you got? What's up? They're like, I'll just wait till you're done. I was like, I'm not even gonna be done. I got a full rail. Like, what's up? And they're like, I'm like, yeah, it's fine. So we do. They're like, oh, okay. You know, like it's part of reframing everything. It's just, and so I think my greatest triumphs are the fact that hopefully I'm loved by my people and I've been able to make a measurable difference in this community, you know, and change kind of what it looks like. And just like I said, we make mistakes, right? Like, we're not for everybody. This restaurant is not for everybody. It's not like we have the goal of supporting local farmers. Like, we still have to charge what we need to charge for, you know, the products that we have. And, you know, but yeah, it's being able to measure that difference and see like that my people are happy. I mean, that's hard. You're talking about like, we have 40 people that work here. Like, you know, how do you keep 40 people happy?
Right. It's hard to keep me happy.
That's rough.
I got everything going.
Like,
right.
I want this place to be like the sanctuary from like everything out there, but it all comes in the door. So I don't know. I think like my mom, I'm kind of an empathic person. I can feel kind of when things are wrong, and it gives me the opportunity to be able to help people.
So you got nominated for James Beard, right?
This is our second time.
So this is the second time. I was going to ask you if it was your first or
second. It's our second time. Yeah, it's our second time to be nominated for Best Chefs South. Yeah.
What does that feel like? Is it cool?
I mean, obviously, it's a great recognition and it's an amazing honor, and we're really humbled to do that. I think more than anything, what it means to me is that it's justification for all the hard work that we're doing here and the mentality of what we're doing, you know, and I think that's the nicest thing, is that people, you know, I don't know how we got there. It must have been people in this community that talked about us and talked about that, hey, everybody in there's happy, you know, because there's very specific guidelines for the James Beard Foundation, and they've changed a lot over the years. So it's, you know, you can't be, you know, and so it's just, yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of emotions, right? There's, you know, last year when it happened, we're like, oh man, that's just amazing. And we were really grateful. I mean, the nomination's good enough just to be out of 15 chefs in the entire South, we were recognized to be one of the quote, you know, best, however you measure that. And, you know, to be up there with Rafael Rios again, he's up for like a fifth time or sixth time. I don't want to, you know, whatever. And he's a good friend of mine, and see him up there and all the hard work he's done. And then Jordan Wright to be jumped up there this year. And, you know,
he does have some good barbecue.
Yeah. You know, and it's like, I think it's great. I think the focus is becoming on like, absolutely, it's always been on education and always been on like being creative and stuff like that. And I think it's evolving just like everyone else's, and into these other, like, how are we nurturing communities? How are we building? And they've always had that focus as well. So, it obviously feels good. It's in a needed time when it has been an extremely hard year. And, I think for everyone, you know, with construction and everything else. So that's great. But yeah, just like I told all my people last year, it's like, hey guys, this is, if we should feel anything, we should feel like this is justification for us being able to push the boundaries of what we think hospitality should be from an environment, from the lens of the employee and the restaurant family, you know, instead of the opposite lens, right?
Yeah.
Which is nothing wrong with that. That's how the world works. But we just try to think of it a little bit differently. It's not like every day we come in and go, we love each other, right?
Let's teach your family. Families among
you. Yeah.
Families, all of that.
It's definitely not like that. It's like, you know, walk in sometimes like, how's it going? Fine, chef.
Oh, okay. Right. Somebody must have been eating too many radishes.
Yeah, they
called too many radishes.
But, and
you know, that's just, you know, that's family.
Yes.
You know, at the end of the day, we just care about each other, and it works out really good. So, and we are trying to always push the envelope on creativity. We just got a, this amazing human kind of fell in our lap with us opening the restaurant. Obviously, I'm going to have to step over there and kind of be dedicated to that for a while, and then be Ren, the farm.
Oh, the farm. Yeah. Okay, got it.
And you know, I'll be jumping back and forth, but I mean, for a good, you know, 6 months, 8 months, I'm going to be there most nights. We'll only be open 4 nights over there.
It's up and running here now.
Yeah, it's up and running, and we hired an executive chef to kind of, you know. And this, it's like the job description is, I need you to be able to take care of my family. You know, it's not like I need you to be the most amazing creative chef. Right. Well, no, he's an amazingly talented chef. His name's Jacob Brill. And he's back there right now. And he came from California. He worked for, some really amazing restaurants out there. He's just a really down to earth, caring guy. He came and worked in the restaurant for like a week, and just my entire staff, just like everybody just kind of like exhaled when he was around. It was just like a sign of relief, you know, like, and that's just great. Like, because anytime anyone new enters into our bubble, it's such a tight knit bubble that it's always like, what's going to happen? How's this going to, you know, and is it going to meld with the family? And, you know, and it just did. He's great. And we're really grateful. But I mean, yeah, he was in California. He was the CDC for Manresa, a 3 Michelin star restaurant in California, which for us to be able to, you know, get someone of that caliber here in Bentonville as well. It's just like, you know, and he moved here as well. His wife's a really creative and innovative farmer, and she moved here to work for some places. And then he kind of we met and then kind of, again, organically happened. And and he's here and we're grateful and it's awesome. And we look forward to all the collaborative stuff we get to do. And like, he and I think on the same level about food, because I also trained in the West Coast, and there's that mentality, and there's this, you know, you are who you trained under, right? Like, there's a collection of chefs out there that like trained under like Alice Waters and all, and a few of the other greats out there. And it's just like that mentality, like it's hard to break it. We, in a good way, you know, right? Luke Wetzel was out there and worked for Chez Panisse for a while, and 9 times out of 10 in the middle of the season, because only a certain amount of things grow here. You know, I'm looking at Luke's menu and I'm like, okay, let me look at his menu first before I write the exact same dish, just because like the framework's the same, you know, or we'll joke about it or something. So it's, really grateful to have him on the team so that we can like push this place into the future. And then like the collaborative nature that we have together, it really works. And the way that he interacts with us, you know, everyone else is really good too. Promoted a few people, and then take, you know, everybody that's going to be over at Ren, the farm, is already here right now. We're already fully staffed, and we've kind of just inflated the staff so that everybody kind of absorbs the mentality. Most people have already worked with us, and they're going over there. But even when we hire new people, they'll work with all the people that are going over there, so they absorb, you know, kind of the mentality that we have here, and they get to train and get all the knowledge from the people that are leaving as well to go over there. But yeah, and then just like tying, just like everything we've talked about, the name there is, my grandmother used to sign all of her letters growing up, RYN, which means remember your name. Like, she used to always say, you're a reflection of all the ones that have come before you and all the ones yet to be. And there's a little shtick in there about like, you come from good people, we're good people, we care about everyone, and we care about, you know, everyone in communities like evolving. So it was more like, you're going to be a good person. You don't have a choice, you know, very proper woman. And then even the logo, I'm kind of sentimental like that. The logo is written in my mother's handwriting and traced by my sister. So I have 3 generations of thought and, of strong, strong, powerful women. And, in that.
Beautiful.
The staff that we had out at Ren is, just somehow, it just happened to be that, you know, it's mostly really strong, like creative women out there. So it's going to be really cool. We're really excited, you know.
What do you want this community and any community coming in to know about Conif?
I just think that Conif is a place for anyone and everyone. And it's, you know, it's a place where we deal with people with all dietary restrictions. You know, I think that's the world is changing, and it's easy. It's easier for us, I think, than others. Like, we're not so tied down to things that we create that we can't flex. Like, you know, in the height of the season, you know, 70% of our menu is vegan because there's so many good vegetables around. And like, if someone comes in and if they put on their reservation, I'm allergic to almonds and eggs and dairy and stuff like that. When they come here, if we have the time, what we try to do, if I don't go out and talk to them when they get here, is we'll already have a menu prepared based off of our menu, the variations, and then the things that they can't have won't even be on there. So they get their menu and they're like, well, I have all these allergies. Like, what can I have? And I'm like, everything. Because they're not, like, they should feel just as special as everyone else. Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing. And that we, you know, we do try really hard, and we create an environment for our people that gives them the opportunity to learn and grow in a nurturing environment. And I think that's right. And we cook good food. Like, we cook good food. But you see how that's like the last thing? That's like the last thing on the list. It's not the last thing on the list, but like.
Well, man, I got to tell you, I appreciate you letting me in your restaurant.
Yeah.
I appreciate you for coming on the Good Time Show.
For sure.
Really appreciate, yeah, I mean, it's a cool restaurant for the community, and it's cool to have a friend.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's what it's about, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks, man.
Yeah.